Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. Delighted to welcome you all to our Midsummer Arts edition of All Sides Weekend. We're here with three arts mavens in Central Ohio who have all been very busy. I used to say that nothing happened in the arts in the summer because there was very little air conditioning, and that's how old I am, and that's not been true for a long time. Janet Chen is the executive director of the Pro Musica Chamber Orchestra, and she has just come off a very successful series of outdoor concerts that she'll tell us about a little later. Tim Veach is here from the Columbus Dance Theater, and we're all going down to see his Apprentices choreographer showcase tonight at 6 o'clock. And Stephen Anderson is here, the director of CatGo, who, God help us all, has all kinds of wonderful things going on. So I welcome you. When I put this show together today, I said, well, it's family. I want family here. Three, our family. And we're going to talk about the arts and what's important to the arts and what's important to audiences for the next hour. And we will encourage you all to join us. So I want to start with you, Janet, because I think that you began experimenting with outdoor concerts last year, and this year you had a bona fide season.
We did.
Where and what and how?
We did. Actually, so we just, as you said, came off of what is actually our third summer series. So I know time flies when you're having fun. but in the past, so the way that this whole collaboration began, it was August 8, 2011 with Franklin Park Conservatory, and we did a pilot test. So the orchestra performed right in front of the Palm House, which many of you know is just a stunning venue. As the sun sets, the sky gets dark, the LED lights within the Palm House just gradually come to life, and it's our orchestra's in front of the Palm House, and it's, you know, gorgeous music, beautiful venue. It's just great. And then we actually received a grant from PNC Arts Alive to then further that and actually develop it into a summer series, and we really wanted to have more of a consistent summer presence. So in the past couple of years, we actually did it 2 weeks apart. We did three concerts 2 weeks apart, but this year we decided to do it festival style.
That's what I was
thinking.
So,
yeah, absolutely. So this is the first time we've done three concerts within 4 days. So it provided a whole new level of intensity, both artistically and logistically. But we did three programs over three different nights. Many people came back night after night. They came Thursday, and then they said, oh, that's so amazing, I want to come back Saturday. Mm-hmm. So I really think we were successful in creating sort of a buzz and really just infusing into the community three full evenings of beautiful music.
Now, would you be thinking of having concerts in the summer in the Southern Theater or indoors? Or who comes to the concerts outdoors that would maybe not be coming, if this is making
sure.
sense to you, indoors?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, we actually have done surveys all the years we've been there, and we just actually tallied the surveys collected from this series. And the aggregate numbers have shown that 48% of the survey that we received back have never been to a Pro Musica concert or event.
That's great.
So that, I think, shows us that we're trying to broaden audiences. Even just walking around the grounds during the concerts, I mean, there are many familiar faces, but there are many unfamiliar faces, folks who brought their dogs, their families, their kids, brought their picnics, and some who just live in the neighborhood and stumbled upon it. So I think we're trying to do our part.
I suspect that you're going to find new faces in your audiences for the Southern Theater concerts, because I know that the Columbus Symphony concerts that I see pretty often in the Ohio Theater are skewing younger.
Mm-hmm.
The line that the audiences are gray and they're dying off here, I don't think you can prove that in this community. And certainly, of all places at Opera Columbus in the Southern Theater, it's a date night show. It's a date
right.
night show.
Right.
It really is. It's much younger people. So I want to talk about a little bit that, too,
mm-hmm.
about where our audiences are coming from and who's coming that you hadn't expected or you wanted to attract as well. So congratulations, because
right.
I know our own Boyce Lancaster was involved
yes.
with that.
Who, it was great. And yeah. I just so I can add, you know, WSU was a great partner this year. Cindy Gaylord and her production
yeah.
team. Oh, my gosh.
Talk about
amazing.
That. Was that going to be on Broad and High on
yeah,
television?
Well, no, actually. So part of the grant award was to have WSU film all three concerts, and we are going to produce a 1 hour highlights of the three concerts.
That's
and it's going to air October 24th, I
And
believe.
If I may say so, with Cindy Gaylord and our TV staff, you're in great
oh,
hands.
Oh, they were
so.
Wonderful.
It's a wonderful.
Wonderful.
That's a great
and
collaboration.
And a lot of fun.
Yeah.
They were so much fun to work
yeah.
with.
Good
so.
To know. Thank
yeah.
you very much for that.
Sure.
Tim Veach, your idea of a summertime is one of them is tonight, which I think is.
Yeah.
I think dance might be a little more difficult outdoors because somebody could get hurt from jumping around. But
we're doing something outdoors in September, but I'll talk about that.
People say, I say sometimes, Tim Veach is coming from the Columbus Dance Theater, and they say, well, we don't like ballet. And I think, no. First of all, you do like ballet. And secondly, tell me about the differences.
Well,
what's your place in the community that's different?
I think where we are as an organization is we're really merging a lot of art forms. We do a lot of things with live music, our whole season's with live music now, so you have a whole music component with that, a lot of it with Carpe Diem String Quartet. And then we also bring theater into what we do. The work that we do is really dance theater in sort of a European spirit.
Hence the title of your company,
right,
Columbus
exactly,
Dance Theater.
Exactly.
Right.
And, you know, we did focus for many years on sort of smaller works. That has changed a little. We've done larger things. Actually, we're going to be doing the largest thing we've ever done in September down on the Columbus Commons stage. It's our first foray into performing outside.
Wow.
And it's September 20. It's a free concert to the city. And it's sponsored by a list of folks, and it's GCAC, PNC, OAC, Puffin Foundation, have all come behind this concert so we could offer it as a free concert. And what it is, it's our Rock Out show. And Rock Out was a show we did 2 years ago in our Black Box space, totally sold it out, tried to turn people away. And that's the premise of the show is it's rock and roll music played by string quartet with with Carpe Diem String Quartet. And when you hear Charles Weatherby play Freebird,
he does rock. Yeah, he rocks.
That's amazing.
On
rocks,
the violin, that riff, you won't believe it. Yeah. And to watch is what it's crazy to watch. But anyway, and Andrew Lipke, who is a rock musician from Philadelphia, who's incredible. And for this concert, we're bringing his entire band, Get the Lead Out, which is a Led Zeppelin tribute band of 12 guys who are incredible. They just did a concert in Springfield, Ohio for 8,000 people. So we are trying to bring dance into the population and so get it out there into the large population. I would love to see maybe WOSU and maybe you show up and that could be part of the mix.
Well, I wonder if I could be invited. But anyway, with a show like that, what if the people in your audience got up and danced? Is
I'm
that what
hoping
you want?
They get up and
what
dance.
What if they crash the stage and kind of dance with the company?
Let's go for it. I'd say that'd be awesome. So, yeah, it's going to be this huge high-energy event.
When did dance leave the sort of sit in the dark with your hands in your lap concert dance experience? When did that end?
You know, I think it ended in some ways in the late 60s, early 70s, the Judson Church movement in New York City, where all of a sudden dance, the premise of postmodern dance is that any movement is dance and anybody can be a dancer. And so that concept sort of reached out into the larger dance world and ballet is a very appropriative art form. It likes to appropriate whatever's going on around it. And so it appropriated these concepts. And so when you go to the ballet now, you rarely see tutus and people standing still.
Right.
It's mostly merging theater and music and movement all together into a really dynamic form.
Remind us, September 20th?
September 20th, downtown, the Columbus Commons stage. You're going to hear about it endlessly. We've got a whole marketing campaign coming out. It's free concert, and it's at 8 o'clock down on the Commons. It's going to be really, really exciting. And we're thrilled to be able to do it.
And you don't have to bring dancing shoes. Bare feet will do, probably.
You can bring your picnic basket and dance around on the grass. It's going to be really, really cool.
Look forward to that. Thanks for telling us about that. And we saved the punchiest for last. My good friend Stephen Anderson, who runs the contemporary...
Catco.
Runs Catco. He is theater in this town, and he has a very, very wide reach. I mean, he works with inmates. He works with special needs children. His company is everywhere. So at 11:16 in the morning of a Friday, what's Catco doing now? I know they're doing something. I know something's
actually up. This is our week off.
No.
We've had 8 weeks of summer camp, and we've just closed Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. It's interesting because I think the climate change is going to have a big impact on this indoor-outdoor stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've noticed that outdoor events this summer, which has been brilliant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But this has not been an ordinary summer.
Right. No. Yeah.
I think numbers have been up. Mm-hmm. Indoor numbers were a little down. Mm. And so
indoor in the summer or indoor generally?
Yeah, okay.
Because everyone wants to be outside.
Yeah, everyone wants to be outside.
And then, of course, we had five opening nights that were impacted by level two snow emergencies last winter.
Right.
So I was talking to a planner, and she was saying, you know, we have to say this is coming. Mm. We know that climate is changing. Mm-hmm. And so how is that going to impact our audiences? Are they going to want to stay home because it's too cold to go out? Are they going to want to be inside because it's too hot to be out? I think those are some really interesting things for us to ask ourselves.
Go with date night. Nookie sells. I'm telling you right now. Okay, go with
date night. But do they want to do it in the grass in the heat? On the inside? With the air conditioning?
When you say do it, you mean sit and paying attention and loving the arts experience.
Of course
experience.
I do.
Yes,
of course I do.
Right. Tell me about Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, being one myself. Tell me about...
Well, that was a musical based on the Michael Caine, Steve Martin film. And we just closed it, but... looking forward, we've got Forever Plaid opening on the 25th of September.
Now, that's been a favorite for a while, right?
It
a favorite?
Well, you know what? It's kind of that Jersey Boys thing. Jersey Boys light, 75 people in the cabaret space, so it's a really intimate experience. And so we'll be doing that. And then, of course, the collaboration with Gallery Players on My Name is Asher Lev.
Well, talk about that a little, because it's a beautiful book, first of all. So,
oh, my goodness. It's the most... beautiful story about, I may start crying because I am that deeply moved by this story. It's about a Hasidic Jew who wants to be an artist. And his father's a rabbi, and he says it's forgiven.
It's Chaim Potok,
forbidden.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yes. Who also wrote The Chosen.
Right, yeah.
And it's forbidden. And finally, the lead rabbi in the community said, some things are gifts from God and we can't figure out what they are. And so they encourage him. And it's about his growth as an artist, but it also is about his growth away from the sacred to the secular.
It's one of the most beautiful novels I've ever written, and I didn't know you were adapting it for the stage. Yeah. And so
I did not. Adam
okay,
Posner.
But it's being done. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Probably at the Jewish Center. Is that?
No, actually, it will be downtown. But we're doing it in cooperation. We're co-producing with Gallery Players.
That's fantastic. That's something really. Great. When does that open?
It opens the end of October.
And how many? How long will it run?
For 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's really something. I would urge people because the book is so beautiful.
That. And the interesting thing is that the canvases that he paints are just white canvases.
Yeah.
And so you imagine the things that they tell you about. Mm. And there's a climax. I'm not going to do a spoiler on this because he paints a portrait of his family that's shocking and deeply breaks the fabric of the family.
Hold that thought. We're going to go to a break very shortly and then come back. If you'd like to join our conversation, 614-292-8513 is the number to call. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org, especially if you have experienced some of our outdoor arts presentations this summer and you're new to that ensemble. If you've never been to Pro Musica before now or CatGo or the Dance Theater, or if you've really been bitten this summer because of an outdoor presentation, let us know that. We really would like to know more about that. 292-8513. Don't go away. And we are back with All Sides Weekend, talking with Tim Veach, who is the artistic director and founder, I believe, of the Columbus Dance Theater. Janet Chen is the executive director of the Pro Musica Chamber Orchestra. And Stephen Anderson is the artistic director, president, CEO, and whatever else you want of CatGo. CatGo is collaborating, coming up with the Gallery Players. They're based at the Jewish Center on the East Side. And how did that collaboration come up? Is that your first time collaborating with
them? Actually, it's not. Okay. I actually began my career out of the Columbus Jewish Center.
Uh-huh.
And so I've always had deep ties there. And we were going to do a play called The Rubenstein Kiss in the second season after the merger. And I thought, gee, this would be the perfect opportunity to blend audiences. And so it was a real win-win. They put it on their subscription. We put it on ours. We had the ability to have some consultants from the center. And we're really going to use that in this because we have to do it right. We have to get the Jewishness of it right. And so
there's even a diction issue. I would think
yes.
that's you know, you can't sound like a nice guy from the Midwest, you know, wearing solace and, you know, and pay
really,
us and things
really,
like that. Yeah,
so. No, it's true. So, but it's a really kind of abstract and poetic piece. So we're looking forward to that collaboration.
Something that you said, you all kind of alluded to this, at climate change and things, that really, you really have to be very cognizant now of what's going on indoors and outdoors with the community as you plan your seasons, mm-hmm. down to who plays or performs or dances what,
right.
when and where. And how do you make that work? I mean, do you get to a point where, you know, I've done the best I can and, you know, never, that's it. That has to be how it is. Is there a yeah. formula? How do you make that work?
Well, I mean, I know for ProMusica, our planning is 2, sometimes 3 years in advance. So sometimes it's right. difficult, you know, I joke about it, but it's true. The first thing I look at is the OSU football schedule.
Well, we all do.
I'm sure we all do that.
I mean, we were just talking about that. Yeah. Our show on the 20th, there is no football that day. No, you have to do that.
You have to be cognizant. But as an example, one of the things that we are changing for our new season is our soiree, sort of like our gala. And for years, since its inception, it's happened in May. And as more things have evolved and more activities, graduation, you know, CCAD fashion show, people are busy in May. So this year we actually decided to move it in February to provide another offering during perhaps what is a, you know, less active time of the year. But also then, what do we do if the weather is bad? So you kind of have to just weigh your, you know, risks.
The weather's bad, you say, come and get free mittens.
Right.
That's all.
Last winter during the polar vortex is when, right in the worst of it, is when we opened Claudel,
yeah.
which was this big, big thing that we've been working on for a year. We actually sold the production out in the middle of the vortex with people hiking through the snow to get in the door. But the problem we had is, you know, our building is kind of a big warehousey space. We could not get the theater to heat up mm-hmm. past 62. Yeah. I mean, we had heaters and all this stuff. It was crazy.
It was a hot show, though.
and you know, this year we're bringing the production back. Actually, it was such a major thing that we're moving it to the Lincoln. It's going to be in February, but it's at the Lincoln.
Are you doing more at the Lincoln?
We are doing
yeah.
a lot more.
Tell, first of all, remind people where your theater is, where your space
is. We're right downtown, 592 East Main Street, corner of Main and Interstate 71.
Right.
There's a lot to miss.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's right there on the corner. And we had Ashley Voss, this awesome graffiti artist. We had a commission, which was sponsored through GCAC, to do awesome graffiti all over the building that sort of implies dance, and it's really quite, so you really see the building now. It's really, really cool. But we do a lot of stuff in our space, but we are doing several productions at the Lincoln. It's sort of become second home for us when we do larger things.
Do you get a different audience at the Lincoln?
I think we're starting to, mm-hmm. and we're working on that and trying to delve more deeply into that East Side community.
It's a beautiful space.
It's a beautiful,
oh,
it's
yeah.
a, you
gorgeous.
Know, gorgeous space. When we did Cleopatra in there, of course, a couple of years ago,
gorgeous.
That was unbelievable because we had columns made
yeah.
that matched the columns of the space. Mm-hmm. So at any rate, we're doing a production, we're doing Claudel there in the spring, and I'm making a new ballet based on the Diary of Anne Frank, and that's going to be done in May with a commissioned score by Charles Weatherby. And Carpe Diem will play it live.
You are doing the Anne Frank Diary as dance.
As dance.
It's been done as opera. Of course, it's been done in the theater. I don't know if it's... I think you might be the first one to do it as dance.
I don't think I'm the first.
Okay.
I do know of a few... But there have always been these sort of smaller, sort of inspired by the story, maybe a 20-minute work or something like that. But I'm going to be making a full extended evening.
Well, the diary is words. How are you going to make dance from words?
I do it a lot.
I know you do. I'm just asking. I'm being devil's
advocate. It was a loaded question, actually.
Right.
He's helping you out.
You know, I'm in the middle of actually developing the piece, and we're going to be looking at a lot of multimedia aspects with it as well. And I want to use the language as jumping off point into her imagination mm-hmm. and to have it take us to places that maybe we don't even think about. And
she loved film stars. She
right.
was a typical teenager of
right.
the time. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited about that project.
Yeah. Terrific.
Yeah.
ProMusica. I mean, you all three have contemporary is either in your title or new work is important to all of you. And
right.
there was a time not that long ago where you very seldom saw new work, and it was thought to really play the safe cards and do La Boheme every year. Not that we don't love La Boheme or the Beethoven piano concertos or Swan Lake or whatever, but I think those days are gone. Now people are less afraid. In fact, they have come to expect things that they don't know much about before they get there, I think. Am I right or not?
Well, I think for our audience is definitely so. And
well, that's in your DNA.
It's our, but I think broadly, I think, you know, as I look at orchestras across the country, many, many more are commissioning, or many, many more are, you know, performing works of, you know, living composers as a small offering of being relevant in what's happening today. And then you can bookend it with more familiar works.
Sure.
But I think people want to walk away from a performance or event having learned something.
When you have a world premiere, any one of you have a world premiere of something you've either commissioned or has come your way, do you feel responsible for the success of that piece after it leaves your theater?
Yeah.
Goes out into the world? I mean, because it's often hard to get...
It's like your child. It's a child.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
It's hard to get a second production sometimes.
Yeah.
We're actually going to have that experience this year because we're doing The Final Table by Herb Brown, and it's a play about five U.S. presidents who are in purgatory playing a game of poker.
Which ones?
It's about, it would be Nixon, Eisenhower, LBJ, Truman, and...
the other guy. Yeah.
The other guy, for comic relief.
Millard Fillmore.
I'm at that age when they slip off. It'll come back to me. I'll shout it out in the middle of something Janet said.
Well, actually,
James Buchanan.
But they're in living memory is what you've done. Yeah.
Yeah. So. And Herb Brown, who wrote I Am My Own...
I Am My Own Wife?
No. He's your... It's my complete memory lapse day today. You are my boy. Thank you. About Nixon and Eisenhower that CATCO did a few years ago.
Oh, okay.
And he's a former Supreme Court judge.
That's right.
Justice.
That's right. So we have to be polite talking about it. Yeah.
No. He's a lovely, lovely man and
that was
so
very
smart.
That was a very compelling play that you did that. So you've got these five. That's a very... almost naughty premise. I mean, that's a very exciting premise. You have these five presidents who were in purgatory, meaning that they didn't get into heaven first try.
And their conversations about themselves, about power, and about So it'll be very, very excited about.
And this is the world premiere, the first time it's ever done.
There have been readings, but this is the first full production.
When that happens, do you have literal ownership of these pieces that you might get licensing fee or something if they go out for their next?
No, this is Herb's. We're doing.
That's Herb's.
We didn't commission it.
Okay, how about you, Janet?
It just depends. I mean, we've commissioned and funded new works, but you know, if we want to perform it 10 years later, we still have to. You know, pay for the rights. But, you know, it is, as Stephen said, it's a baby. You know, we commissioned Pulitzer Prize winner composer Aaron J. Kernis, and we premiered it in April of last season. And just recently in June, Josh Roman, the cellist, performed the piece again at the American League of Orchestras conference so that is a gratifying experience to know what you helped create is now being passed on and it's getting played. And I think for us, that's the goal. You want the music that's current to live on. So that's,
you need to think about culture too, because I mean, with all of the options that people have for entertainment, you know, through Netflix and everything, people are getting new. They expect new every day.
And I think that's very true.
I mean, I think that the appetite is really huge that people have now, and they are absorbing information so quickly from so many different sources. So if you just offer standardized thing, I think it doesn't really move people to the theater.
Well, also, you have to have a real reason to do even a really standard piece like a Beethoven sonata or a Shakespeare play. You have to have a real point of view with that piece. You know, you have to do the text and what the author wrote, but then you have to really put... Don't you have to put your own stamp on it?
No, of course, but I think that there was a time when... You can argue with me about this, but a time when new work also meant weird work, you know. I think that which succeeds the most is that which pushes the boundary, gives us another way to look at things, but it isn't weird for weird's sake.
Well, there's, you know, I think that things should be good.
Well, you know,
but you know what I mean.
No, I know what you mean. The public. there was a movement, particularly back in like I would say like the early 80s, and there was like a trend toward like shocking for shocking's sake or just obtuse. Like I'm coming and I have no idea what this is all about.
Right, it must be good because I don't understand it.
Right. It must be really good because I have no idea. Yeah. So I think that, I think that accessibility to the audience and bringing them into the work when you're making new work is critical. I mean, there's a really funny interview with Twyla Tharp where she was talking about her work in the 70s and she's like saying, oh, you know, I decided I was doing this and if you don't understand it and you don't get it, well, screw you. Who cares? And she goes, I've had to reevaluate that.
Then she did Sinatra songs.
Right, exactly. Right. So, you know.
Well, but the story is really, I think, important for both of us.
Yes, you know, the story is right.
We long for stories as human beings. For some sort of way to put handles on the world. Mm-hmm.
Well, I was working with the students last night who were doing this choreography workshop, which is showcased tonight at 6 o'clock, and it's young people between the ages of 12 and 16. Making dances, and it's been awesome, 2-week process with them. And, I was saying, if you are honest on stage and you are absolutely doing what you intended to do with clarity and purpose, it will be interesting, mm-hmm. and that you will be speaking. And so that, I think, is what we need to be doing in new work. I think that we have to be clear about what we are really trying to say, and if we do that with authenticity, the viewer will be interested.
If the performer's really committed, then so will the audience becomes that way too. But it really has to go. You can't just recite or move or just play. You have to really...
Well, I think art connects past, present, and future. Mm. So, you know, when you think about programming, whether it's stage, dance, music, a new work can very easily relevantly tie to something that's been done in the past and reflects what's now and what's in the future. So, I think there is a real strong connection and less of a fear of new.
Mm-hmm. So. I'm sitting here and I'm having so much fun talking to these three family members, frankly, about the arts world that I keep forgetting to invite people to join the conversation. 292-8513, that's a 614 number. You can also send us an email at allsides@wosu.org and let us know about your feelings about the arts in Central Ohio, what you're missing, what you'd like to see happen. If you've enjoyed something outdoors this summer or currently, and you'd never experienced it before, let us know that as well. 292-8513, allsides@wosu.org. Janet, ProMusica has a not-so-secret weapon, but we would be remiss in not discussing David Donsmeyer.
Yes.
Tell me about David Donsmeyer. Who is he, and what does he do for you?
Oh, well, David is our new music director.
We can say David now?
Okay. We can say David, okay. David, yeah. He's now into his second full season as really only the second music director in our history. And if you have not met David.
He's a hottie, first of all. That's what they're telling me. I was told to say that.
Yeah. I mean, if you've not met him, seen him, had a chance to be around him, just call me, email me, and I will work on that because the moment you meet him, you just are infused with this incredible artistic energy. I can't really describe it in words, but we are so excited to have him on board. He has infused a new energy in the orchestra. Inspired the musicians to really get to the next level. We are talking big ambitions for the orchestra. We want to become ambassadors for Columbus and get our name out into the country and really help promote.
He could do that. You could do that, but I mean, anybody would buy anything from you, trust me. But I'm just saying he really could.
Really
he's a
can.
Very, very high energy, yes. smart guy.
And he's very, very dedicated to.
And charming.
Charming, wonderful, wonderful musician, intelligent, love his approach, his delivery, and he's just a normal guy, when he talks to people. So
and his wife's excited. A singer.
His wife is a singer. They live in Chicago, but they spend a lot of time here in Columbus, does a lot of guest conducting, opportunities across the country and in Europe. And I think I think not only ProMusica, but I think the city is very lucky to have him as part of the wonderful mix of artistic leadership.
And I need to mention also that he does a regular podcast with Boyce Lancaster
on
Classical 101, D in the Name of Donsmeyer, which is delightful and fun.
It's fun to listen to.
And people should check that out on the WOSU.org page. Mm-hmm. We have a call from Mark in Columbus who wants to talk about educational work in schools. Hello, Mark. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is a great discussion. I've heard each of the people on the show talk about some of the non-performance work that they're doing out in the community, the educational work. I understand that, that Stephen goes to prison every once in a while, too.
You must know Stephen, yes.
Yeah, that's right. I'm really interested in the kinds of works you're doing beyond just the performance work.
Thank you. Let's have that discussion. Thanks, Mark. Stephen, go ahead.
Well, I can start with we have a longstanding from, you know, CATCO and the Phoenix Theater for Children merged 5 years ago, and the Phoenix had a longstanding relationship with Columbus City Schools with children at risk of failure in the classroom, and we continue to do that work. We also do some work. We're about to build a website to share all of the lesson plans that we have using drama to teach other subjects, and we expect that to have a pretty big impact on the educational community. And the exciting thing is that I still get to dabble a little bit myself. When the merger happened, they said no children, no writing, and no prisons. I've broken all of those rules.
They really said that? They did.
No. Well, to focus me. You know, that can be a problem.
We have to take a break in just a second. But before that, I wanted to remind everybody of one thing that you, I don't know if you still, but you did before. You or members of your company would often be with children who had been abused to get them to open up and discuss to the authorities what had happened to them.
Right. Actually, that's to teach interrogators right. how to talk to those children. Right. The actors would act in role. And we can talk about that a little bit
okay.
more after the break.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back shortly. Don't go away. This is All Sides Weekend talking about the arts. Thank you, Amy Jurevich. I'm Christopher Purdy. We are back discussing the arts and entertainment and culture in Central Ohio with Tim Veach of the Columbus Dance Theater, Janet Chen of the Pro Musica Chamber Orchestra, and Stephen Anderson of CATCO. And let the point be made every time you folks are here that what the people pay to see in the theaters, I guess you're just mainstream performances, is but a part of what goes on. That's why I asked you, Stephen, what's happening at 11 o'clock in the morning. Something's always going on. The public doesn't. That's not maybe for the public, but for kids or for at-risk people or whatever. So let's get into that a little bit more. With Tim, I know you do a lot as
right.
well.
Yeah, we have a whole education arm to the organization. We have a school. It's a professional training school for children who, you know, may just want to explore dance. A lot of our kids are very serious about dance, and we have graduated numbers of young people into the professional companies. And we have a really exciting, interesting program, which is this boys scholarship program we have, which we started about 8 years ago, and we now have 20 boys in the school who are extremely serious about ballet. And that is a large number. I think it could be the largest number of boys training in the region.
Where do they come from, these boys?
All around. We have a number of young men who this is their thing. I mean, this is going to change their life. Ages between like 7 to 18 years old, and we have all levels in the school for them.
You are also the father of at least one dancer.
I am the father right. of a dancer.
Right.
Yes,
okay.
I am.
So, and you're married to an actress.
I am
right?
married to an
and
actress.
And you're a dancer yourself.
Yes, I am.
So that's
and
a
my
real...
daughter has now announced she's going to be a theater major
and your
at
parents,
Audubon University.
Your parents were so normal, and they were nice.
I know.
People. I don't know what happened.
You know, my dad though acted with Jerry Orbach.
Did he really?
In college, when he was my father was an actor and a singer in college, and then he ended up going into the army and became a director of economic development for AT&T. So, you know, but...
smart guy.
Did yeah, pretty good, yeah.
Exactly,
yeah,
you know. Yeah, but yeah. we have a wonderful education arm to our organization, and it's a really important part of what we do.
Michael's on the phone with a very interesting question about street musicians. Hi, Michael.
Hello.
Go ahead.
I was just curious. I think you guys were talking about culture and music in Columbus, and one of the things that I found to be really interesting about the city is street music, street performers. I see them all the time. I'm up and down High Street. I mean, I honestly go down there and I play cello sometimes, and I think it's just
good.
It's really interesting because you can go down there and you can run into a couple people that happen to have a few instruments, and before you know it, there's a bunch of people on the side of the street playing music for anybody that walks by, and I just find, not to say anything against, you know, going and paying for a very nice show, but I think there's very interesting that things like that just pop up, and I really enjoy that part of Columbus.
Clearly, Michael, I guess it's a GCAC that agrees with you because they're now funding buskers, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
Have any of you had any? We had a busker in here a couple of weeks ago, and it was fantastic. This guy came in.
You know what happened to Columbus?
What?
I went to sleep, and I got up the next morning, and we were cool. We had those cards to go. We've got the bicycles. And there is more there are more street performers on the street, which is exciting. And
But they're getting a city imprimatur. They're getting money now to do that.
Right.
Which is, I think, phenomenal. I don't know any other city that's doing that. I think it's fantastic.
My concern about that is that I think that people will say, oh, well, the city pays for this. And I think you got an obligation when you hear a wonderful cellist on the street to pop in a couple of bucks.
They're not paid that much, I must say.
Artists are never paid enough.
Yeah. Right.
So, that's for sure.
Well, they're not paid so that they can do their art full time and support a family. That's really the bottom line. I mean, no one expects to be rich, but it would be nice if you could just do that and not have three other jobs, which many people have as well. That's an interesting question for each of you. What point in your careers were you able to live off what you're doing in the arts? And you have kids. I mean, you have a mortgage and all that stuff.
Yeah, oh boy. I mean, when I was a dancer, I was very fortunate. Now, I lived on a very thin margin, but I worked as a dancer from the moment I left the University of Illinois, and I had a job, and then I danced in Chicago and New York and always was in a company. I never waited tables. I was always dancing. But you had to be willing to, I mean, literally live on the pennies. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I did. And then, you know, with what I do with CDT, it's endless amounts of fundraising and development, endless amounts of trying to support, because I do pay my dancers. These people, this is their job, and I have deep responsibility there. And we just had an awesome thing happen where we had this wonderful donor, an anonymous donor, come forward and has just gifted CDT $100,000.
Fantastic.
Which has been really, and $50,000 is a matching challenge to the community. So if you'd like to jump in, that'd be great. But it's it's lovely and unexpected completely. And so when you get bolt out of the blue like that, it's extra wonderful. And so that's great.
Well, you know, success breeds success. That's an old, but all three of your organizations are working all the time and having a lot of more. And I think since I've been in town, I think the audiences literally have two classes have graduated, really, almost. And now we have, and I wanted, let's touch on this, because I get a little resentful when I keep reading about the gray audience. I'm not saying we don't love them, but I'm just saying that people are talking about mothballs when they talk about the performing arts.
You know, I take issue with this, and it's true. Mm-hmm. There's some gray hairs here too.
Well, thank God it's radio.
But my point is, people have earned the right to, you know, and we should always honor those people, and then try to help cultivate other people to understand that.
Right.
But I never apologize for the maturity of my audience.
Right. And I'm with you on that. Exactly. Because
I was just observing. I wasn't.
Right. Yeah. I know. But you said that you resented it. And I think we do as well.
Right.
There's a time and a place where things fall into one's life. It's just part of life's journey. And, I completely agree with Stephen. Is we're very grateful for the dedicated base of folks who have come year after year. And this has become part, if you're gray haired, this is becomes part of your life. And what do you do then just on the education side to then expose, so those future audiences will have.
So people can claim it for their own.
But, of the old, now that I'm one of the older people that you talk about, but I'm just saying, when I first came here, what really impressed me was if you talk to an older person, they were very hip. Mm-hmm. They were very, very progressive, really. Mm-hmm. These were the people that would go to hear the crazy string quartet with the computer and, things like that and would even fund it, So I'm really...
I think we live in a highly educated community.
We live very educated.
I mean, the number of universities that are here and
you underestimate this town at your peril.
Right. Yeah. I agree with that. I really, really do. And, I was... When my wife and I decided to leave New York City, we were pretty calculating about where could we go. And Columbus, for lots of reasons, and a lot of it was because of arts and culture.
Have any of us born and raised here? I wasn't, but
no.
So,
no.
I know in the 20 odd years I've been here, it's changed a great deal. It has become hip.
When I came over, a destination.
When
I came over the rise and saw the Leveque Lincoln Tower in 1976, that was it. That was the only building that was taller than four stories. I thought, holy mother of God, what have I done? And when I got here and saw what this community is and became a part of it, I had no intention. I moved here from L.A. I had no intention of staying in Columbus, Ohio. I had places to go, and it's been a wonderful ride for me.
Yeah. And I've been here 12 years, and even within 12 years, the growth has been astonishing.
It's exponential.
Yeah. Well, what we have now that I don't think we had years ago is a level of expectation now for the people who are the consumers. Expect a level of performance and expect a variety of programming as well that maybe they didn't 20 years ago, you know.
Right.
So, I mean, it does work both ways. The more you do, the more you get supported and vice versa.
Right.
Is marketing harder now?
It's different.
Really? How is it different?
Well, it's a lot more interactive. I mean, it's not just throw an ad in the newspaper and
walk
away.
You used to say, I'm going to do a display ad and some flyers and maybe a couple of posters and we're done.
And we're done. No. It's a conversation.
Yep.
Marketing is a conversation now. It is a conversation through social media,
through reaching out.
And actually, like for this Rock Out show, we're talking about like boots on the ground ideas of like having people walking around downtown with little business cards that say, "Do you rock out?" and have the date on the thing. It's got to like hit people from 100 angles and be lively in their face because there's just so much out there. It's huge what's out there.
And it's easy to stay home now because if you have a clicker,
that's right.
I mean, so you really have to make it.
Well, and it's not, I think lots of people made the mistake of thinking with social media, it was, we open a show tonight. Who cares? There's 100 things opening tonight.
Right.
Why should it? It's the conversation about why is this important to you?
Mm-hmm. And how is this art you? Mm-hmm. How are you inside this art? Mm-hmm. Because that's what people are looking for. They're looking for a way to identify themselves in the art they view.
It's a personal connection.
It's a personal thing. And I think that if you can make that story happen for people, they will attend.
Right. It's funny. When we were doing Still Magnolias, because it was just perfect fodder. Because, you know, a one-liner would come up I'd take a picture and do an Instagram with the line. And one day we had a really, really, you know, the play is about a woman who dies. Yeah. And so we had that teary conversation about things that, you know, had happened in our lives. And it was time to move on. And so I said, you know, I've told you more than I've told my therapist. And they said, what's said to Magnolias stays with Magnolias. So, of course, what goes to the...
Yeah.
Not 5 seconds went by before somebody tweeted, somebody better tell those Magnolias that Stephen Anderson is pimping them out every chance he gets. So it's a part of that conversation.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
You know, to make it real. And people really, we do it, so we don't know what's interesting.
Right.
Know?
Also, I think we're past the point where we really can expect the audience to sit there quietly. I mean, I know that it's good that they do, but I said facetiously to you, Tim, about people just coming barefoot and dancing when you do a show, and you thought that was great.
I think that would be amazing. I would totally love that. I hope they all do that. When we're downtown at the Commons, it would be incredible. I kind of was thinking, I don't see how they're not going to do that. Because when you hear that music played the way it's played, with the dancers moving, and you're outside and under the stars, I mean, I would be standing up moving around. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think it's going
to
be...
How do you choreograph to a rock band?
You know, it's interesting. It's really no different than choreographing to classical music in some ways. I mean, classical music leads you through phrases. It builds on itself. Uh-huh. It's like folding all the time. Rock and roll music is pulsating under you a lot more. So you have the responsibility of developing those phrases usually. So that's the one difference that I would note. But I think you find incredible energy in rock music that just surges you through your ideas of what you're doing in a different way.
You know, a few weeks ago, my wife, we went to see Aretha, and I don't go to a lot of concerts like that, but I thought, you know, she came out and it was, you know, you did sit back, wow. Mm. I mean, the power of that performance was extraordinary.
Right.
So, and the crowd, and she had 5,000 or 6,000 people, more than that, just eating out of her hand like that with the third note out of her voice.
Yeah.
We have some emails that came in. Gina, every week this summer, the Teresa's seem to have been go to a huge event with thousands of people downtown and lots of beer. Go to a nice small event. It's near downtown at 8 p.m. and be home at 11. Be more creative. Maybe we'd like to do something at 4 and try a new restaurant after. More small early afternoon events, please, away from away from downtown, too. Okay, that's one way to go.
For summer?
Yeah, that's one way to go.
Yeah.
I guess sometimes you have to go where the people are, and they do tend to congregate in big spaces.
Right. Well, right. You know, we're actually looking at how at Halloween there's a costume store that pops up in a strip mall, and it's there for 6 weeks, and it's gone. Hmm. We're looking at doing some pop-up cabarets that way.
Really?
That's cool.
Yeah. No kidding, really, yeah.
Oh, sorry, cool. I completely agree with that.
That's interesting.
We need to shake up this whole notion of, you know, performance times.
Exactly. And performance venues and the behavior expected of the audiences, too, has to be a little bit looser, I think, as well. I know that Bill Connor at Kappa was telling me a story, and I thought he was being facetious, and he wasn't, that they did a survey about what audiences wanted in the Southern, and they wanted to bring their wine and beer into the theater. So apparently that's not a problem now.
We've done that for years.
Bring your cookies and whatever that you buy in the house. Thank you very much.
My husband loves to do that. He buys his gin and tonic and comes and sits.
But I think he's right. I mean, that's a given in many of the news of people that you kind of want to come to your shows. So that's another barrier that's been kicked down. We have 5 minutes left, and I want to talk less for a change and ask each of you to tell us what's coming up, what's exciting about the, you can't really say new seasons because that doesn't stop anymore, but as of September and whatever, what's coming up that's really exciting? Let's start with Janet Chen.
Well, Pro Musica, opening night is next October 12th, Sunday, and we have a fantastic pianist. She's going to be performing a Goulda's piano concerto called Concerto for Myself. And it's, if you heard the Goulda cello concerto, it's very similar. It's like Mozart meets rock. So that's the feature. We're doing Eroica, Beethoven's Eroica, and a chamber version of Bernstein's West Side Story, which will be very cool. We've never done it before.
You can dance to that.
So October 12th and a full season of really, really great programs. Two commissions, two premieres during the year. Agudis Mon and Jew, the very funny comedic piano-violin duo for our soiree, very Victor Borge style, which will be a lot of fun in February. And then we close with David and Vadim Gluzman, our creative partner, in May. They have never performed together. It'll be the first time, and I think it'll knock everyone's socks off.
It'd be fun if they hate each other, too.
I know. Yeah.
And my colleague, Boyce Lancaster, does the after talks.
He does,
Stick around.
Yes.
Because you give out cookies, too.
We give out cookies, and again, it's this whole idea of conversation.
Yeah.
You've experienced it. We want to hear from you. We want your questions, and it's a conversation. So,
Stephen Anderson at CATCO, Asher Levy is going to break hearts and be something that really you need to go to. And what else is going on?
Oh, well, the end of the month will be The Revenge of the Space Pandas by David Mamet.
I beg your pardon.
By David. It's a Mamet play for children. And people keep looking at me like, really?
Mamet and children, huh?
Mamet and children. No, it's an early Mamet play, and we'll be doing that at the Columbus Performing Arts Center, 549 Franklin Avenue, right around the corner from Tim.
Now, why are you going there? Just curious. It's a beautiful place. I'm
right.
Just
actually, we manage that space for the Columbus Recreation and Parks. Yes, and so we do a number of children's performances there, as well as keep it open for smaller groups and emerging groups to rent and use. So
is that the end of this month?
It's the end of August. And then the 25th of September is Forever Plaid. And the one thing that I haven't mentioned, and I'm not going to remember the dates, but it's in February, and you go to our website, CATCO is Theater, Masterclass. The story of Maria Callas and the Terrence McNally play. And we're very excited about that. And we're doing that in collaboration with the opera.
Well, I look forward to that. And Tim Veach.
We have a big season. And it opens with Rock Out again on the 20th. And then we do a really exciting program, Dancers Making Dances, which is the dancers from the company making dances on each other, which is going to be really cool. It's in October. Match Girl has its 15th anniversary this year, our annual ballet Match Girl, and it will have full orchestra and choir from Ohio Wesleyan University, conducted by Jason Heaster. It's going to be very exciting up at Otterbein. Claudel comes back in February. We're really excited about mounting it in the Lincoln and expanding that piece. GCAC grants us funding for the Columbus Dances Fellowship Concert, which is this wonderful thing of providing a venue for choreographers from the community, and they win awards through that. We're doing a program with Bradley Sowash, improvisational
composer,
thing.
Yeah,
with A to Z program, where I make 26 phrases of dance. The audience has scorecards. They vote on how much they like each phrase. We take the top 10 phrases, and Bradley takes three pieces of music, plays them. They vote for the music.
And with that,
and
we say
we
good afternoon.
Bye.
And thank you all. Timothy Veach from the Columbus Dance Theater, Janet Chen, Pro Musica Chamber Orchestra, Stephen Anderson, Katko, and Prison. Thank you very much, all of you, for joining us. I'm Christopher Purdy for All Sides Weekend. Thank you.